This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
On the long line, joining us all the way from England, merry old England, just outside of Oxford, is author, producer John Lloyd joins us. Say, hey, John, how you doing?
Hi, Coy. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. And I know over there it's about 10 o'clock at night, so I can't tell you how much we appreciate you making time out of your evening to chat with us over here in the States about your new book that you wrote with John Mitchinson, The Book of General Ignorance. Everything you think you know is wrong. And I have to tell you, John, I interview authors on this program all the time, and they're usually very, really interesting books, fascinating. Well, yours is all that and a little bit more. It's downright fun.
Oh, good.
It really is a fun book.
Well, it was fantastic fun to write, you can imagine. And this is really what we do. We make a television show in the UK called QI, which stands for Quite Interesting. And so we're in our fifth season now. We do 12 shows a year. And it's all about trying to show people that a lot of stuff, not just what you learn at school is wrong, but a lot of stuff that you could have learned at school is really, really interesting. And that in some ways, you know that funny thing, Coy, that we can all recall a couple of teachers who really, really inspired us. It could be in anything. It could be in chemistry or English or history, but not all teachers are like that. And the ones who are just transform a subject for you. And in some ways, that's what we're trying to do for kids here is say anything, atomic physics, Greek philosophy, paleontology, archaeology, that is all extraordinarily interesting if you just have the patience to look a little bit longer. And to save you the trouble, we've written this book so you don't have to do all the work yourself.
And it is page after page of question. You pose a question and you answer it. And the answer, what's so fascinating and fun about it is the answer is usually, it's not what you expect. And let's just get right into it. The very first question you pose on the book on page one is, what's the name of the tallest mountain in the world?
Well, this is a great little question here because, of course, everybody knows that's Everest. But in orology is the science of mountains. You're a bit of an academic yourself, I know, and you may know that. But how you measure a mountain is very interesting. You can see where the top is. That's not too difficult. But where's the bottom of a mountain? Now, all mountains, as it happens, have enormous roots that go under the surface of the earth. And so it's very difficult to say where the bottom is. So traditionally, mountains have been measured from sea level to the peak of the mountain. That's only one way of doing it. So that is what we call the highest mountain. The tallest mountain is measured from, as far as we can tell, the bottom of the mountain to the top. So the tallest mountain in the world is Mauna Kea, which is the peak of the island of Hawaii, because the Hawaiian Islands, like many other Pacific islands, are just gigantic mountains of which you can only just see the top, and they go right down to the bottom of the sea. And Mauna Kea is many thousands of feet taller than Everest, measured that way. In fact, another way you can measure mountains is from the center of the earth to the peak of the mountain, which seems a pretty fair way of doing it. Everest is completely not the highest mountain in that way, and in fact, the beaches of Ecuador are further from the center of the earth than Everest is. So what we're trying to do here is just make people think for a bit, you know, rather than saying, oh, I know the answer is Everest. You think, well, just think about it, you know. You probably never really thought about a mountain very hard, and they are the most amazing things, of course.
We're talking with John Lloyd. His new book is The Book of General Ignorance. Everything you think you know is wrong. Keep listening, folks, and we'll tell you how you can get a free copy of this book at the end of the interview. John, just to throw out some more questions here that are in the book, and really it is dozens and dozens of questions. You ask, who was born by Immaculate Conception? And I would think that would be Jesus.
You would think it would be, wouldn't you? It catches a lot of people, unless you're a Catholic, when you would know that it was the Virgin Mary, of course, who was born by Immaculate Conception, which just means that she was born without sin. It doesn't mean that, you know, it was a virgin birth or anything of that kind of stuff. And this is one of the things that we like to do. We like to deal with myth. We like to deal with science. We like to deal with a lot of stuff about the Bible that we've really enjoyed, because, you know, a lot of people think the Bible's a very important book. Very, very few people have read it, and even fewer have read it carefully. And one of most fun facts of the book is, one of the fun questions is, how many sheep were there on Noah's Ark? Now, you know, every seven-year-old knows that, don't they? It's two, because the animals went in two by two. If you actually read Genesis, you can see clearly that there were 14 sheep on Noah's Ark, because God said, take seven of the male and the female of every clean animal. That means any kind of animal you can eat. Now, I know it's a myth, but still, it's funny, isn't it, that every kindergarten Bible class is taught two animals of every sort, and it's not right.
Well, I guess they only needed two when they got to where they were going, and they had to eat until then, so it load up with some food.
Well, it's all fascinating, the whole thing about Noah's Ark. Somebody in the, I forget which century it was, calculated that if they were going to actually make the ark work, about three-quarters of it would have been loaded with hay just to give the animals something to eat. And there was a big question as to whether they took fish on board, whether Noah took an aquarium on the ark with him to keep the fish, or whether they just let them fend for themselves.
We're talking with John Lloyd. His new book is The Book of General Ignorance. John, you write in here, I'm reading, what has a three-second memory? There's actually something...
This is one of those great myths. A goldfish, you know, everybody says a goldfish. This is so not right. The recent research in Britain has shown that goldfish's memory, they have at least a three-month memory. They can remember things perfectly well. They also, I'm not sure this is in the book, but they've done a lot of research with goldfish and music, and goldfish are particularly fond of jazz, you know, and blues they like. And they can tell the difference between, Oscar Peterson and Sonny Boy Williamson. I don't know how on earth they test these goldfish to do that, but it's not true they have a poor memory. It's complete slander on these poor little fishes.
Now, John, you ask in the book what's in a coconut, and I would assume it would be coconut milk.
Well, no, you probably caught me there a bit, so I have to look up coconuts. One of the things about it, Corey, is that there's so much information here, particularly as all of it is stuff that we did not know 5 years ago. We've dug all this stuff out for ourselves, so we have sometimes struggled to remember every single fact in the book, because there are, as you've said, there are thousands. There are 230 difficult questions in here, but thousands of little pieces of information. So the answer to your question is water. It's coconut water. Because coconut milk has to be made by boiling the meat with water, and proper water, and straining it. But it's the water that coconut produces. It's the only plant in the world to produce this liquid inside its seed. It's the most extraordinary thing.
John Lloyd is my guest, live from England, just outside of Oxford. John, what are your favorite questions? What are the ones that you really like?
I love so many of them. I was just going to say that coconut water is extraordinary, because you can use this stuff instead of a saline drip in a hospital. Isn't that weird? I mean, how did anybody who designed the coconut know that it was going to be useful for that? Well, okay, my favorites. I got this piece of information. I read about 3 or 4 years ago, I read a whole book on frogs, which in themselves are the most extraordinary, fascinating things. And the thing about frogs is this. Every kid knows that what noise does a frog make? Ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. We all know that. We've seen it in thousands of cartoons and movies. There are now thought to be around 5,000 known species of frogs in the world. Only one species of these 5,000 in the world goes ribbit. And that is the Southern Pacific tree frog, which, as it happens, this is the frog that lives in Hollywood, you know, in Beverly Hills and all those kind of places. And when the movie industry moved from New York to L.A. in the 1900s, and they wanted to do a Tarzan picture, and they wanted a sort of jungle sound effect, they'd go out and they'd record the frogs in the pond outside, and they all went ribbit. Or in the trees, I should say, really, most of them. And so this has been plastered all over movies for the last sort of 100 years or so. So that even in movies set in Vietnam, you'll hear this ribbit, ribbit frog in the swamps. But in Vietnam, they don't make that kind of noise. And I just love that. I just think that it's just peeling the sort of scales from people's eyes and saying to them, you know, why don't you think for yourself a bit? Why do you accept this? Because actually frogs, I've never heard a frog go ribbit. They go croak in Britain.
Hey, John, you also correct people about George Washington being the first American president?
Oh, yeah, wrong. Wrongy, wrong, 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 wrong. Well, you know, you might say this is slightly nitpicking, because before the states actually formally achieved independence, there was a body called the United States in Congress Assembled, which is where we get the word Congress from. And before Washington was elected to this body, there were 14 guys before him, 14 presidents, of whom the first was a chap called Peyton Randolph, that, I mean, almost nobody's ever heard of. But there he is. He's the first president of the USA. And this was the body which, you know, initiated the war with Britain, and they were the people who declared independence. So it is genuinely the U.S. And so the next question in the book is, what were George Washington's false teeth made from, which I think it's generally said in the States they were made of wood, but they weren't. They were made of hippopotamus tooth. Hippopotamus is in themselves extraordinary animals. They only have four teeth. One of these was extracted and used to make the president's false teeth, which were extremely uncomfortable. There were a few other things in there as well, but hippo is the main ingredient. And they were kind of spring-loaded, these things, so that he found it very hard to shut his mouth. That's why you rarely see him smiling. He was in considerable pain the whole time. It just shows you, doesn't it, what a person can achieve against all the odds, that somebody who must have been in pretty much agony all the time could do such extraordinary things.
My guest is John Lloyd, live from England. His new book is The Book of General Ignorance. Everything you think you know is wrong. I love this question, what was the first animal in space? Because I guess we all assume it was a monkey or a dog.
No, it was a fruit fly.
A fruit fly?
Well, fruit flies are actually extraordinarily well used in science, because they breed very quickly, and they have a genetic, bizarrely, fruit flies are genetically extraordinarily similar to human beings. They're susceptible to many of the same illnesses we get. So all sorts of things have been discovered by studying them. I think they went off in an American V-2 rocket along with some corn seeds in 1946. That's how long ago it was, long before dogs and chimpanzees and that kind of thing. And the other thing you really need to know about fruit flies, which I think is one of the most extraordinary facts in the book, which is fruit flies have the longest sperm of any creature on the planet, longer than a blue whale's, or anything you like. The sperm of a fruit flies, you've probably seen them on, you know, a bowl of fruit. They're tiny little things.
Yeah, yeah.
Their sperm, when you unravel it, they only have one at a time, and they're like 5 centimeters long, many, many times longer than the fruit fly itself. How extraordinary is that? And what for? You just can't imagine.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Quite extraordinary.
My goodness. I also noticed in here, I was just reading in your book, it said space isn't remote at all. It's only an hour's drive away if your car could go straight up.
That's right. It's the technical definition of space is about 60 miles away. I think it's 62 miles officially. It's probably a French measurement. I don't know. And it's one of the mistakes that people make about that. You know, you often hear people saying, what's the only man-made object you can see from the moon? And they'll say, oh, it's the Great Wall of China. It's not that. That's not true at all. I mean, you can't see anything. You can't see any man-made objects from the moon. You can just about make out the continents. The countries are very, very difficult to see. But, you know, it's a quarter of a million miles away, the moon. Of course you can't see the Great Wall of China. It's absolutely impossible. But, of course, you can see it from space, 60 miles away. Yeah, you can see it, no problem. But then you can just see, you know, a regular freeway. You can see towns, and, you know, especially at night, they all show up. You can even see individual large buildings. And we know this from what you can see from the space shuttle photographs. You know, fantastic detail. Or Google Earth, that's all space shuttle stuff.
We're talking with John Lloyd, live from England. His new book is The Book of General Ignorance. And John, before I let you go, I wanted to just let folks know that you are also a television producer and a writer, and you have worked, you were the producer of Blackadder, which we watch here on British television, on my DirecTV, and with Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, I've known Rowan since he was a student. He's one of my best friends. And we made Blackadder together over the took about 8 years in the 1980s. The most fantastic show, great privilege to do, great people in it. You probably seen House with Hugh Laurie. Do people like that show?
Yep. And of course, Rowan also did the Mr. Bean movies.
Yeah,
which my kids think that's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, they just watch it and laugh out loud. They're 5-year-olds and they just laugh out loud.
Until I was nearly 40, I was just a regular guy trying to make a success of my life, trying to do stuff well, and I made loads of television programs. I worked very, very hard, and I thought I knew stuff. You know, I got married at 38. I was, and we had kids, my wife and I, and they ask questions, don't they? And I was shocked. I thought, I don't know any of the answers to these things. My kids used to ask things like, Daddy, does God look after burglars? And where was I before I was me? And let alone was the sky blue? Why is the sky blue? And it really hit me like a sledgehammer, this. I thought, why don't I know these things? I'd never thought about any of these things. And this is what my kids did for me, was make me think for myself, make me think I have to find some of these things out. And that's why the whole of the book of General Ignorance is in the form of questions, because if people will only ask more questions, life would be a lot better.
John Lloyd, the author of the book of General Ignorance, along with John Mitchinson. It's in bookstores now. Everybody go out and get a copy. It's a bestseller in the UK. John, thank you so much. It's been an honor to talk with you.
It's a pleasure, Coy, and an honor to talk to you too. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.